Welcome to Build Your Practice, sharing ideas to help you grow your business. Whether you're a financial advisor, lawyer, accountant, insurance specialist, or other professional, we provide practical tips to help you win new clients and profitably manage your growth. Today, we're delighted to welcome Evan Thompson. Evan is owner of Evan Thompson & Associates. He will offer some road-tested business building tips gathered over 30 years as a communications advisor and business coach to many of Canada's leading practicing professionals.
And welcome to Build Your Practice with Evan Thompson. Our focus today is going to be on helping professionals work effectively with their teams to get the best business results possible. First, Evan, want to talk a little bit about your background. You're a communications consultant and personal branding coach with 3 decades of experience working with some of Canada's leading practicing professionals. Trained as a journalist, you are in Canada and the UK, and you've served on several boards as chair or communications director. So you really know what you're talking about, I would say. So it's good to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Remind you as well, anytime during the show you want to get hold of Evan, you can do so at 416-322-2908. Now, let's just get right down to it. What do you think are the most important activities for practicing professionals and making the most of their support teams?
Well, let me first say that regardless of your profession, you could be a financial advisor, mm-hmm. a lawyer, an accountant, an insurance agent, anyone who relies on quality service and the support of dedicated people to make you look well, you need to delegate. You need to recognize the efforts of your employees. You need to support their professional development. And interestingly, you need to run efficient meetings. And these are the 4 steps I've learned over the years that mm-hmm. really separate businesses that are chugging along from those who are on fire.
Now, could you break this down into, because I mean, depending on the size of the company or your workforce, you might have employees and part of your team that are completely different, obviously genders, but different ages from different groups, right?
There's an amazing amount of activity going on mm-hmm. in the different cohorts where professional managers have to work with different, you know, groups. We have the boomers, for example. That would be myself.
Okay.
We're born between 46 and 1964. Then we have the Gen Xers between 65 and 81.
Right here. Hand is up. Gotcha. Okay.
And then we have the millennials, who are very much in the news today. They're born between 82 and 2003. They're the fastest growing cohort. And by 2020, 1 in 3 Canadians will be millennials. So this is transporting itself or shifting into the way the workplace is functioning. Boomers, Gen Xers, millennials, all working together under one roof.
Now, you did mention early on when we first started that there are 4 ways that you found to make a difference between a business that's basically chugging along and ones that's growing steadily, being profitable. Give me the 4, and then I want to break all 4 of them down. What are they?
At the top of the list, I put delegating confidently, mm-hmm. followed by instilling loyalty in your team. 3rd, supporting their professional development. And 4th, running efficient meetings.
Okay, let's get back to the first one, which I think is a really important one. And I'm sure you see this fail quite often in businesses, regardless of size. That is delegating confidently. Where does that start?
It starts with the business owner realizing that they can't do everything. They may be self-made. They may have been in the business, say, the financial wealth management business for decades. Mm-hmm. They've done very well and they feel they have the answers and they can do everything themselves. That's when the problem starts, because with one person shows, there's a limit to the growth potential for the firm.
You can't wear all hats, right?
Right.
Okay.
No one can be all things to all people. The first key step in delegating properly is to know when to delegate. And you can ask yourself a number of questions. How important is the task that you want to delegate to someone? Is the person competent? Yep. Does the person have the time? And does the person have the understanding of how important this particular task is? Also, when you're delegating, it's really important to be clear about deadlines. When you're working with a group of people, it could be 5 people, 10 people, in a professional environment, there's often a lot of pressure. You really have to have the thing really well-oiled and well-organized.
Once you've trained someone how to begin to delegate, but just take a little pressure off, don't hold the stick so tightly, how difficult is that for them to do initially? Just say, okay, you know what? They can do it. That's the person you've picked to delegate to do that job. Just back off and let them do it. How tough is that for someone?
I think a confident manager who understands every aspect of their business and the goals of their business can quickly find the best person to delegate to.
Is there a lot of trial and error?
There can be,
right.
Yes. And that's why if you're delegating to a person who's very new in the industry, new to your business, you want to do the risk management routine, which involves giving them an assignment that is not critical to their practice.
Does this go back to, it's a little bit of a reversal, but does this go back to really hiring properly in the first place? Looking ahead to, if I hire Evan for my business, I'm thinking maybe six months, a year down the road, I want to delegate him X number of duties for my business. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Right.
There has to be a series of core competencies when you hire people.
Right.
So you can pass the baton to them. It's like a relay race. And this is a huge part of succession planning. But when I first started my business some years ago as a communications consultant, I positioned myself as a solution looking for a challenge, which meant I didn't really have a clear focus, but I could do many things. And that's where today professionals who hire selectively do well. If they get someone on their team who wants to try different things, they can delegate different things to them and determine their strengths and their interests and their passions, especially where the millennials are concerned.
When you train someone for this and you begin to teach them how to delegate within their team, are you forecasting that, okay, in a set amount of time, I'm going to get you to a point where you can do the job, do the core skills that you bring to the business, or is it you want to get to the point where they can pretty much sit back from Saint Martin and email their team and have them run the business and then enjoy the fruits of their labor?
That's quite a nice, ambitious time frame.
Exactly.
That's
right.
Going
okay,
from
we'll give
zero
it a decade.
To 60.
Right.
No, I would aspire to that, but that is a good question. You want them to be competent and grow gradually, and the other piece I need to mention about delegating, client-facing roles are critical.
Explain.
In any practicing profession.
Okay.
Client-facing being the person who sits with the client and answers their questions about their quarterly statements or their invoicing or their billings.
Okay.
Who's ready to sit and answer the hard questions. That to me is client facing. It's also involving keeping clients posted on the progress of their investments, the progress of their case, their file as it goes through the firm.
Anytime you want to get a hold of Evan outside of the show, by the way, 416-322-2908. Let's move on to instilling loyalty in your team. Now, this has got to be a skill unto itself. Yeah, what is that? How does one go about doing that?
Instilling loyalty is part science, part art. It takes a lot of empathy, but it also takes a lot of shrewd business calculation. Your goal when you hire someone is to gain the most from their contribution. They are human capital. They may be great people, but ultimately they're human capital.
That's a good way to put it.
And they are the people who will get you to the beach in Saint Martin.
We're back to that, are we?
Okay. I can't lose that. I'm sorry.
Good. That'll be a recurring theme on this show, right? Getting Evan to Saint Martin. Go on. Continue.
A good example of instilling loyalty is working with millennials. And millennials, a huge growing cohort, have different expectations from their employment experience than others. They question ethics more than others. They want more of a nurturing experience. They want to be paid attention to, they want to be mentored, brought along, and feel that they really make a difference.
More than, say, a baby boomer?
I would say yes.
Wow.
Simply because the boomers are far enough along in their career, they see the finish line.
Right, yeah, yeah, okay.
And this is a generalization, I know, but they're not as focused on their long-term skills development as, say, a millennial is, unless they're planning to change, leave the firm, and start a new career.
What makes them stay?
I've done a lot of reading on that, and interestingly, it's not all about the money.
See, which is surprising, right? Money and holidays, you think, is what the key attractive factor is to that job, but it's not.
Not at all. It's the feeling that people are making a contribution, they are being recognized, they're being heard, and it's the certain knowledge that their employer has their best interests at heart and really wants to see them succeed and remain as part of the team. So the best pillars of loyalty involve engagement, fair compensation, and opportunities that await. If the job is done properly, if they're doing their work well, they'll get more responsibility and they'll get more satisfaction.
If it's a larger company and you're teaching the management team how to instill loyalty in their members, do you ever run into a situation where there could be some favoritism among that team? Because I could see that cropping up with, you know, mentoring and telling everybody you're doing a good job and giving them more responsibility. Other people on the team might be going, hey, how come he's getting everything? I'm not getting anything.
That happens frequently.
Right.
And it happens, I believe, for one key reason. Some of us are introverted and some of us are extroverted. Some of us are much more comfortable going to our boss and saying, I need you to sit and listen to me for half an hour. I have some stuff that's bugging me and I need your guidance. Not a lot of people have that in them. They'll suffer in silence, or worse, they'll complain to their fellow colleagues. But because managers and business owners are human, they do build relationships with some employees before others because they just have an affinity. They have a professional chemistry.
Just chemistry, right? Yeah.
And chemistry, we can't deny it.
Absolutely
goes back
not.
To our limbic system and our primitive brain. Sometimes we can't articulate why we are attracted to people.
Why
in
we
a
jive
professional
with certain
sense.
People? Yeah.
Yeah. And why we don't.
I know a lot of big corporations, you see, I mean, Google's classic for having, you know, they have the sleep beds upstairs and people allowed to take naps whenever they want to and become more creative. How about you see companies get team members involved in, say, a charity? Does that work as well?
A charity is a very, very good piece of evidence that the company they're working for really cares about the community as well as their bottom line. And companies who involve themselves in charities, they can bring employees more into their culture, into their vision, their dream, and live it out in other ways than billing and bringing in new clients and new revenue streams.
It kind of gives another way to get involved and feel like part of the company if they're all, well, a common good, I guess you could say, right?
It is a common good. And this is absolutely amazing when you see millennials and Gen Xers in action. Millennials, as we know, are now setting up their own foundations online. This is a huge revolution. Thanks to social media, thanks to the internet, the awareness of other people's lot in life has grown exponentially.
You think that's all positive?
I think it can be very distressing.
Right.
I think there are people who will take advantage of crowdfunding, reaching out to people for donations, and then just misappropriating the funds. That's the downside.
Right.
The internet has brought a huge number of new players to the fundraising arena. And like apples in a big basket, some of them are rotten, but most I'd like to think aren't.
Talking about the four ways you found to make a difference between a business that is chugging along and one that is just growing steadily and being profitable. Anytime you want to get a hold of Evan outside of show hours, 416-322-2908. We've done delegating confidently, instilling loyalty. Let's move on to supporting professional development. Give me a breakdown of that one.
When you support an employee in their professional development, you're investing in them, but you're also investing in your business. In my experience, when I've supported people in their ongoing education, they tend to see their commitment in a different way. They tend to see me not as their employer, but as their strategic business partner. So some people may say this is delusional. People will go where the dollars are. They're hired, they're fired, they're laid off. I really, in my experience and with the clients I've worked with, that is not so. Professional development speaks volumes in amplifying your commitment to your, I hate this word, but to your people.
Well, the expression is money will not buy you happiness. And I guess in the workforce, that's commonplace, right?
The professional development piece need not be expensive. We're not talking about being investing in an executive MBA program, unless you happen to be a large institution with huge capitalization.
Yeah.
2 and 3 member CA firms find ways to invest in their human capital. and their young CAs who are coming on.
Do you find it has to be under that business umbrella, or it can be something as simple as, you say, professional development, is taking your team out to improv classes? I mean, would that count as part of that? Because it brings out the personality. It's, gets to open them up, feels that team member, the whole team building thing. Is that part of it?
I've seen that work extraordinarily well. And it works well for a number of reasons. One being, you have introverts and you have extroverts, and they're all under one roof, and they're all learning to trust and respect each other's opinions. And they leave elated because they've gone out of their comfort zone and they've tried something different. But in a safe and nurturing environment, communications workshops can be extremely powerful. You know, starting with very basic communication skills and tools, then moving through more elaborate programs such as, public speaking and giving technical presentations.
Is that still really a hurdle for most people in that environment?
In my view, it certainly is. Huh? We tend to stereotype certain professions. There are many outgoing, articulate, highly sociable CAs. But when we think of a chartered accountant, we don't think of someone who is eloquent and articulate and passionate.
Right.
We think of someone who's very focused on the numbers. That's the way they've been trained.
Absolutely.
So when you can bring all that talent and all that technical knowledge forward, that's when your firm starts to rock, because you start bringing in the business. And it's not just you, the owner, or you and your partners. It's everyone in the firm.
And I guess this will bear fruit in, like, our first point, that is going back to delegating confidently when everybody's up. All boats rise with the tide, right?
Exactly.
Right, right.
And a confident business owner will bring confidence to their employees.
The number again, 416-322-2908, to get hold of Evan anytime outside of show hours. Let's get to the fourth point in the four. And this one, I was really surprised when we were going through our notes before the show. That is running efficient meetings. I would never have thought that would be on this list. Explain that.
Yeah, you were surprised. And I'm sure a lot of people are surprised. So what's so big about a meeting?
Yeah, it's a meeting. Just
it's
come show up and get the information, right?
Well, that actually articulates the problem. How many meetings have you been to where the host says, "I know it's Friday afternoon, it's a beautiful day, I've got a tee off time at 5.
Right.
And now, what does that tell the people around the table about the value that person assigns to that meeting?
Just not invested.
Nothing. And that is the fatal mistake of so many people who organize and host meetings. They immediately downplay themselves. So there goes the whole proposition. To look at it more positively, a meeting is an opportunity for not only updating information, but bringing people together and having them share appropriately at the right times their ideas and their vision. It's also a tremendous opportunity to keep them abreast of your goals and your visions as a business owner, whether you're in a large corporation or you're a practicing professional with 5 employees.
From a technical standpoint, should you be springing meetings on people, or should you give them fair warning and have them, on a calendar basis?
In my experience, springing meetings on people sends 2 messages. One, something amazing has happened and I want everyone in this room right now to share, or we're bankrupt.
Nice.
We're done.
I'll take the first one. Thank you very much.
Most do.
Right, eh? No kidding. So consistency is key.
Yes. Best to give people lead time, lots of lead time, so they can prepare, they can bring something to the meeting, ideas, thoughts. And the way the meeting flows is up to really the host, up to their confidence in the rapport they have with the people in the meeting and what they want to cover, what they want to communicate. What's the goal? What's the purpose of the meeting? And most importantly, what do you want people to do when they leave the room?
Right.
Roll their eyes and thank goodness that's over for this week.
Or just ruminate possibly on what was said in the meeting and maybe contribute later. Would that be a good goal?
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
And invite feedback.
We've all been to so many meetings where it's just, you're on a round table and the boss or whoever's up there, they say their speech from their bully pulpit and then the meeting's over and you walk away. Is it not more advantageous maybe to get the group involved in the meeting? ask for contributions then and there during the meeting?
Absolutely, if you have the time. Some meetings are 15-minute updates. Obviously, some may be product-focused, project-focused, where we're just meeting for 15 minutes just to find out who's on first with each element of this important project.
Okay.
Or they can be a little more protracted, a little longer, where they're a little more free-flowing and they're inviting the comments from the people.
I looked through the notes here before we started the show, and this one under this heading I find very interesting. It says, pretend that they are being taped and transmitted on a feed to key influencers. What is that?
If I may say, I think it's really good, and I've seen it work.
Do you tell them?
I suggest that they are going to be taped. They're live to air, and the people who are watching them, following them on social, on television, are their influencers. They're their ultimate boss, their ultimate client, the people who can help them most in their career, family members, anyone who they want to impress professionally. And you would not believe the attentiveness, the passion, the commitment that flows from that when they think they're being watched.
Yeah, my instinct upon hearing that would be that they would just shut up. They would clam up right away because they'd be nervous. But you say they don't do that.
No, because they're given the parameters and they want to succeed. They want to move forward in their career. So they're going to put their best foot forward and they're going to open up. I originally thought of this idea when I was involved in a number of meetings where the meetings were hijacked by very, very opinionated,
in your face,
extroverted, right, in your face people. Yeah. And it wasn't a good experience for the other people in the room. So my thought was, if these people could see themselves on camera and hear themselves, they wouldn't be quite as loose. They'd be more respectful. They'd listen to others and they'd be much more concise and think before they talk. You know, I love that expression, before engaging mouth, engage brain.
It's so true, right?
I think that's the saying, yeah.
We'll get to our last couple minutes here. Evan, anything you want to wrap up this show with? Final thoughts.
Final thoughts for this day. I'm just thinking that professionalism and passion are contagious. Leading by example is a hackneyed phrase. Everybody uses it. Walking around by managing, that goes back to 1975
right.
or so.
Right.
But these phrases endure because they're true. If you set the stage, as you say, a rising tide lifts all boats, you will see that reflected in the people who you trust to move your business forward beside you, as opposed to beneath you.
Great, my friend. We're looking forward to our next show right here, Build Your Practice with Evan Thompson. Anytime outside of show hours, as I mentioned, the phone number to get a hold, 416-322-2908.
Thanks for joining us on Build Your Practice. We'll return soon with more tips on how to make your practice thrive. Evan can be reached at 416-322-2908.